Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 22, 2019. The National Pre-Transitional Committee members spent millions of dollars on hotel accommodations.
Some of them were charging almost $300 per night. And $300 per night means times 60 is $9,000 per month. And that is very high.
And editors in South Sudan say the government is censoring their work.
The article is about the delaying of the salaries for 5 months. And the article actually was writing on base of the statement that made by...
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's information minister says over the past 6 months, the National Pre-Transitional Committee has spent nearly all of the $1 million and 100 million South Sudanese pounds it was allocated to oversee the implementation of pre-transitional activities on hotel accommodations for its officials. Mr. McQuay said the NPTC's officials will now move to lesser expensive hotels. Losuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
McQuay confirms that some NPTC officials have been staying in Juba hotels that charge exorbitant prices.
Some of them were charging almost $300 per night. And $300 per night means times 60 is $9,000 per month. And that is very high. So this is why when we said that we are moving these people, some of them decided to drop even to 100. Those who were charging 300 decided to drop to 100. But what I know is that the 100 million which was given to us plus the $10 million were also given to us, I think they have all gone for the rents.
McQuay is appealing to the parties to the peace agreement who have representatives with the NPTC to make good use of its $285 million budget for implementing all pre-transitional activities.
All that we need is understanding of our problem and preparing the necessary funding. We should use the minimum. Wherever affordable. Whatever affordable, we use the minimum in order to reduce the cost. But if we continue to make it that way, definitely the $285 million will not help.
After the parties agreed to extend the pre-transitional period another 6 months, the South Sudan government pledged $100 million to fund the implementation of pre-transitional activities. 2 weeks ago, the United States, United Kingdom and Norway, known as the Troika, called on the NPTC to manage the funds in a transparent manner. Peter Mayen, head of the People's Liberal Party and a member of the NPTC, welcomes the decision. He says some officials being accommodated at Juba hotels are members of various opposition groups who were signatories to the peace deal but are not part of the official committees and institutions implementing the agreement.
Majority of these people were to go to the states, turned several generals, going back to their homes, you know. So those ones now are the ones that we're dealing with. And we're going to relocate them to the states. And by doing so, that means within the overall members will almost reduce nearly to 120 members being accommodated in the hotel. We support the move because basically the move is well implemented, going to be administratively tackled.
Juba resident Susan Joseph welcomes the decision to send NPTC officials to cheaper hotels to try to save what money remains for implementing the peace deal.
Regarding the issue of too much budget going into hotels, it should be stopped. We hope that the peace comes because people are suffering, especially as women.
He's speaking in Arabic, another Juba resident who prefers to be identified only as Omoyo for safety reasons says all he wants to see is improved security so he can return to farming his land.
All I want is freedom. I want to be happy. I want to farm freely without anyone asking me.
on the issue of peace. It all depends on the government. And as a civilian, we don't have anything. We just want health services. We want water, good roads. If these things are not there, then there's nothing.
During the 8-month pre-transitional period, which is now due to expire in November, officials from all parties to the agreement have been accommodated in posh hotels, including the Dembish, Palm Africa, and Parklands, most or all of which charge at least $300 per night. NPTC officials say most delegates will be relocated to the South Sudan Hotel, which charges about $50 per night. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Editors of two daily newspapers in South Sudan capital Juba are accusing the National Security of censoring their articles. The Arabic daily Al Mokhif printed a blank page on Tuesday after national security operatives went to a company that prints the newspaper and removed an opinion piece. And the editor of an English newspaper says national security officers pulled an article from its paper before publishing within last week. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
Cirilo says he has filed a formal complaint with the South Sudan Media Authority condemning the move as an attack on the media. He says it is the latest in a wave of attacks on print media in South Sudan.
Since the establishment of the media authority, all the thing was going good. And we feel that our environment is going to be improved. But now I think there is something wrong, and I request those of media authority to work hard and to try to get a very urgent solution about this case. This is a serious case facing us in the printing media. And I think those of radio and TV, their environment is better.
Emmanuel Monchol, editor-in-chief of the English daily The Dawn, says since January, National Security Service operatives have gone to Universal Printers and removed at least 10 articles from his newspaper critical of the Kiir administration.
Some of the articles that have been removed in my newspaper, they are not a national security threat. They are articles that talk about issues affecting people. But now if I'm complaining that, okay, something is paining me and I want the leadership to understand that something is bothering me, and then the politician has the authority to go and command people from the back there that don't let this one come out so that it is known that I am not paying attention to my people, it is really hurting us.
Monchol blames some unnamed politicians of trying to prevent the public from criticizing their poor performance by using national security agents to silence critics. Something, he says, must change. He says security operatives removed the latest article from his newspaper on May 18th.
That article was an open letter addressed to the president by the constituents of the Honorable Minister Awut Dengashville. In that letter, the community raised their complaint to the president. And they have not insulted the Honorable Minister, and they have not said anything bad other than saying, look, Mr. President, we are facing 4 things with our MP. That article was removed. Was it a national security threat? So I feel maybe this some of these officers are paying allegiance to some of their leaders or politicians other than the government.
Monchol says censoring newspapers not only frustrates editors and commercial printers and causes huge financial losses, but also affects the reputation of South Sudan newspapers.
If an opinion article is removed and the reader finds that one whole page is blank, what comes to the mind of the reader is that these people have forgotten to put an article here. So therefore, it means we are not serious. So the reader will lose interest in the article, in the newspaper entirely. So these people are careless. How can they forget a page? So what I'm suggesting is whenever they remove this article, they should actually write in place of that this article was removed so that the public should know. Instead of just removing it and leaving it blank, they should inform our readers that this article was removed by the NSS.
Manchol says National Security Service efforts to remove critical articles is having a chilling effect on newspapers across South Sudan. Kwong Pal, chairman of South Sudan Editors Forum, says the article removed from Al-Muwaqif has nothing to do with national security or hate speech.
The citizens have the right to talk to their president. Who are you to tell people that they have no access to the president? He's the president of the country. He's not the president of one person. As a citizen, I have the right to ask Mr. President that this is a problem I'm facing in this country, or this is a problem I'm going through.
South Sudan in Focus contacted the South Sudan Media Authority, which monitors and regulates media in the country, for a comment, but was told that its chief, Elijah Allaire, who is the only person allowed to speak to the media on such matters, was out of the office for a meeting. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
President Salva Kiir told a gathering this week for the first time about calls for protest to oust his government after Sudanese protesters staged months of protest that led to the ouster of their longtime leader, Omar al-Bashir. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
In remarks at an event launching the South Sudan's international communication system, President Salva Kiir urged the country's youth to focus on building the country rather than engaging in more fighting and causing more chaos in the country. He also warned young people against misusing social media.
You are being aided by the social media from abroad. That Amchul Muzarat.
You are being urged by social media from abroad to go and demonstrate. If you are told to demonstrate against the government, don't they know that in demonstrations people can die if the government just close up their mind and hold you down by automatic weapons? Why should you die? We don't do that. And I will not order the soldiers to shoot you down. That was not our mission. But we cannot entertain indiscipline in our country.
Mr. Kiir says South Sudanese fought several years for independence, which eventually occurred in 2011 when South Sudan broke away from Sudan. He says South Sudanese should ignore previous calls by the online group, the Red Card Movement, to stage mass protests against the Kiir administration, similar to what happened in neighboring Sudan.
The youth should not be lured into fighting because of ranks, because of whatever. Military ranks, what are they? If you have not been there, please concentrate on what we are launching today. This is where you will progress. In fighting, you will never progress. You may get killed. If you are lucky to be wounded, then you are lucky. But not everybody that gets a wound and lives. So let us really concentrate on peace.
Speaking at the same event, Information Minister Michael Makwe said some South Sudanese are exploiting the ignorance of a majority of the population by spreading disinformation on the internet to cause intercommunal conflicts.
We have seen the misuse of ICT by those who are living outside the country, where they conveniently exploit our lack of access to information. We would like our society, women and youth, to have access to information in their villages and towns across South Sudan in order to promote our cultures and seek business opportunities worldwide.
Makwe says South Sudan's first so-called information gateway should have been constructed in 2007, but was delayed because of technical problems. He says today's communication system was established under a public-private partnership, with international partners experienced in telecommunications under a shared revenue agreement with the South Sudan government. Makwe says the new system will provide a high quality of voice and data traffic at a low cost. The Minister of Information, Communication and Technology says his office recently awarded licenses to a number of companies to begin installing fiber optic cable from the Ugandan border to Juba to increase electronic communication for the government and to promote e-commerce. He says the government is also working on digital migration to move from analog television frequencies to digital television channels. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at how fake and expired drugs make their ways into South Sudan. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can African countries develop to export more manufacturing goods rather than raw materials?
African countries should open many companies, industries, markets, new markets that will specialize in manufacturing. So as they manufacture, they will have to export more.
African countries should put up more industries and encourage people to go into agro-processing.
And also needs people to be trained on how to manufacture the things ready so that they can be transported.
I will have to say that we need to build our own machines. A product like cocoa, for example, if we had the machineries to manufacture chocolates, I'm sure we will not be exporting it outside.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese authorities say, despite enacting laws to curb the sale and importation of expired or fake drugs, some traders continue to smuggle in such products. The head of the South Sudan's National Bureau of Standards urges consumers to check the expiration dates on all medicine and food items before purchasing them. Ding Magot has more for VOA from Juba.
Nearly 3 weeks ago, Ugandan authorities say they seized a significant amount of fake and expired drugs that were on their way to South Sudan and other neighboring countries. The drugs included anti-malarial drugs and antibiotics. Majak Denkwal, acting director of the South Sudan National Bureau of Standards, says after joining the East African community, South Sudan adopted regional standards for monitoring drugs, food, and other goods coming into the country, which includes checking such items at all border crossing points. But he admits some traders who travel by bus continue to smuggle illegal goods disguised as personal items into South Sudan.
Actually, there is some good they may enter illegal way, smuggling. But we order our people that to be very careful. If there is something happen, they are not comply with the standard there. They had to inform the security and custom. That did good in that use for human consumption.
Major General Daniel Jacin Boula, spokesman for the South Sudan National Police Service, says a few months ago, police carried out a raid and arrested several smugglers who were later charged with selling illicit drugs.
In the operation, we managed to arrest some people who had expired goods, and we arrest some who are doing the repackaging, because they bring goods in a certain package and then they change the packages. And some are food items are stored in a very poor facility. That is another crime which affects the goods. And then the tools which they use for repackaging, you see, they use very poor tools. And then they also do something to change the expiring date.
The South Sudan Food and Drug Authority says it regularly checks drug stores to ensure that they do not sell expired, fake, or illegal drugs. Justin says 1 year ago, police discovered there were some South Sudanese pharmacies selling drugs that he says were about to expire.
I went when I met with somebody from Uganda Bureau of Standards. When I asked him, especially that, I told him there is some good come from Uganda. Sometimes that not comply with the standards. What happened? Yeah, I didn't check it well. He told me that they take care for the good who come and enter Uganda. But something out to Uganda, they are not my concern with it. So that we become the victim of that. We've been hoping that they can do their level best. When it comes to our side, we have to project.
Juba pharmacist Wani Paulino Logale says before buying medicine from his suppliers, he routinely checks to make sure that he is not buying expired products.
We check it in the wholesale before we bring it in the pharmacy, which date is expiry, which date of manufacture. Then after that, we'll bring it, and then monthly we have checkup. Before or end of the month, we check the whole shelf, what we have. And all those expired medicine, we download them down, and then the one which is not expired, we leave it there. Then after that, we will give it to the Minister of Health.
James Dingarang is a pharmacist assistant at Alpha Medical Center in Juba. He says when buying medicine from suppliers, he double-checks the labels to ensure it is not expired. Garang says before selling drugs to customers, he double-checks the labels to ensure that the medicine has not expired.
Please, if you are a medical personnel, I advise all of you to take care of the drug because the drug are sensitive to the people. Sometimes you might give the expired drug. You must read out the expired drug before the patient is coming. When you open your pharmacy at morning time, you're supposed to open the pharmacy and you check before you start the work whether there is an expired drug or not in your pharmacy.
Garang says all expired drugs are supposed to be collected by quality control officials who then ban the drugs or bury them. Kwol says South Sudan's National Bureau of Standards is working with their Uganda counterpart to curb the sale of expired and illegal drugs and food into the region. For VOA News, I'm Ling Magot in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Blantyre, where supporters of Malawi's ruling party began celebrating today in response to unofficial election results showing incumbent President Peter Mutharika in the lead. Opposition parties are not amused. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The Malawi Electoral Commission said in a statement Wednesday afternoon that it is not ready to start announcing the results from Tuesday's general elections. However, unconfirmed results announced by local radio and TV stations show Mutharika leading in most of the polling centers. This prompted members of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party to celebrate and congratulate each other through social media. Ben Peer is the campaign director for the DPP.
We would have every reason to believe in the results as it stands now because it is only Malawians that have got to speak. And as it stands now, Malawians have spoken. Meanwhile, we are at peace.
But opposition parties took a dim view on the early celebration. Richard Chimwendo Banda is the team leader for electoral process for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, led by Lazarus Chakwera.
It's more or less like a propaganda, a manipulation of the people's mind. We're not happy. But the good thing, as I said and I continue to highlight, is that our people on the ground have got the results. And there's not going to be any manipulation. And we're going to announce those results, which are clearly indicating who has won these elections. And it's none other than Dr. Lazarus Chakwera.
Rafiki Hajat is executive director of Policy for Interaction, a local think tank. He told VOA it is premature for any party to start claiming victory before the start of the announcement of the official results.
I think any celebration at this juncture is premature. And I would simply warn those people that he who laughs best laughs last.
The Electoral Commission says it will start announcing some partial results received so far from the country's 28 districts as soon as they are verified. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The separatist war in parts of Cameroon took a gruesome turn this week with the shooting death of a four-month old baby. A rights group blames the army for the death, but the government says it was the work of the separatists. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
It is a sad atmosphere in the southwestern town of Moyuka as people brave a heavy military presence to visit Emilia Agbo 2 days after her baby girl was killed in the family home. Funineba, the baby's father, says the military attacked their neighborhood on May 21 and killed his child.
My wife was preparing food. The child was sleeping. I was in front of the door. 6 armor cars just bashed in. Flew bullet, brrr, everywhere the places. My wife took off because there was no way to come and collect the child. So after all the shooting all along, a ministry man marched the door, shot the child and said, "These are the remaining bullets here."
The death of the baby has provoked anger among locals. Maximilian Gombe, coordinator of the Network of Human Rights Defenders in Central Africa, says the group believes the baby's killer was from Cameroon's military. She says it is very difficult, if not impossible, for separatist fighters to operate and leave Moyoka, which is excessively militarized, without being traced by the military. She says the bullets found near the murdered baby are not those made locally as used by the separatist fighters. In a statement Wednesday, government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi denied the military was responsible. He blamed the separatists, saying they initiated the killing to discredit the government after some of their peers surrendered. Sadi said the bullets found near the baby were planted there to make it look like the military's doing. Meanwhile, a male head was discovered Tuesday in the English-speaking town of Bamenda, triggering gunfire and general panic. It was identified as that of a teacher. The incident took place a day after Cameroon celebrated Unity Day on May 20. Separatists vowed to shut down any celebrations of the event, prompting the government to deploy extra troops, saying they were needed to protect civilians. Humanitarian worker and pastor Theodore Ngek says the deployment, attacks on suspected separatist hideouts, and the gruesome killings have provoked a mass movement of people.
Vous avez dans une petite ville comme Banga.
He says in less than a week, more than 500 people have added to the nearly 5,000 IDPs that have arrived in the French-speaking town of Manga from the war-torn English-speaking regions. He says a majority of them sleep in the open on pieces of paper, while some few lucky ones who can afford to rent rooms lack food to eat. He says all of them are traumatized from hearing gunshots and trekking long distances. Human rights groups have accused security forces of targeting civilians in the far north, where Cameroon is fighting Boko Haram, and in the northwest and southwest regions, where the military is battling English-speaking separatists trying to create a breakaway nation. Moki Edwin Kinzeka. For VOA News, Yaoundé.
That report by Kinzeka from Yaoundé brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. If you have comments on this show, our email is southsudan@voanews.com. Again, our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you're planning to travel outside Juba Town, where there are no FM stations, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kHz, 13865 kHz, and 15180 kHz. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Oh, you know how late we turn the joke.